Why do people gamble? I know of four reasons. I'll give you three now and one later. Number one on the list by those who write books about this subject is simply to amass a large sum of money. We hope to hit it big. We'd like to take home a few million dollars. We'd love 18 million if we live just now in Iowa. I believe that's the amount in the lottery. The second reason is the excitement involved. There is a great deal of anticipation. There is a great deal of suspense. There's an element of risk, of danger. And some people thrive on this, enjoy it. The third reason is because we feel obligated to. In corporate America, if you play golf with a team or a group, you probably will be required, expected, to put some dollars on that game. About the time the World Series rolls around, you'll be expected to put a few dollars in the pot. In other words, you are required, almost by custom and by a little pressure in the job you hold, to do a little gambling. Those are three reasons that people do it. I think you'd be interested in what people who have overcome gambling call it. They call it the art of victimization. The art of making victims. What type of persons gamble? Do people who care a great deal about other people, do people who have great compassion on others gamble? And the answer is no. Because when I gamble, I don't care how much you lose. I don't care whether you can pay a bill, whether you've lost every dime you have. I don't care. All I'm concerned about is winning. And I'll rejoice in what I win. What happens to you makes no difference to me. Now, I've heard people say they gamble with their friends. That's an odd kind of friendship. If I'm willing to fleece you and take everything you have and have no concern about you thereafter, that's an odd kind of friendship. So I say to you that people who gamble, by and large, and they may not be this way when they begin, but before they've gone very long, they are selfish, self-centered people who have no concern about the ills or the cares of others. We know that gambling is tempting. It's enticing. If you listen to the advertising put out by the gambling interests, casinos sound like the most wonderful places in the world. They advertise good food, good music, fun. They have all kinds of drawings where you can win this or win that. They have all kinds of come-ons. And they mask, of course, the real reason they want you there. But it's tempting, very tempting. And there are many people who take vacations especially to gamble. I know a number of persons who have spent every vacation for the past 20 years in Las Vegas. To them, that's a vacation. To sit down at the table and play blackjack or poker or feed the one-armed bandits or whatever they want to do. But that's their idea of fun and relaxation. I have never seen a gambler who wasn't a covetous person. Because they covet what they want, to win. Every time they put a quarter in that slot machine, they covet what it might give them. Covetousness, according to Colossians 3, verse 5, is idolatry. And you cannot serve God and mammon. Mammon is the god they serve because that's the god they worship when they go into those places. Is gambling like farming? I've heard people say this who I think don't realize what they are saying. But let me ask you a question. In every gambling situation, there are odds. If you play the slot machines in Las Vegas, and you play those who only give you a $3 or a $5 payoff, the odds are still 150 to 1 that you won't win. Now, if you go to the $10 machines or the $100 machines, or you go to some of the big payoffs, the odds become rather astronomical. In the last Missouri lottery, Powerball, the odds were 180 million to 1. Those were the odds on winning in that Powerball drawing. If you are a farmer, and some of you have been or are, would you plant a crop, spend the money to prepare that seed bed and put in the seed and fertilizer if you had one chance in 1,000 of making that crop? Would any of you take such a risk? Of course not. Now, you know also that in gambling, a great many people must lose in order for someone to win. Even at a poker table, let's say we have five persons playing. What are the odds against drawing a royal flush? That's an ace, king, queen, jack, and ten of the same suit. What are the odds? Very, very high. About 1 in 2,500 hands, you might draw a royal flush. What are the odds on drawing a straight? Any numbers in sequence, they don't have to be the same suit. What are the odds on a full house? And so on. You'll find that these run pretty high. But suppose that the odds were only 1 in 5. Would you still plant in hope if you had 80% possibility that you would not succeed? Would you? Would you take a risk like that? No, you wouldn't. Not if you were wise. In other words, there are no odds established in farming. This is not like gambling in any way, and I'll say more about this in a little while. There simply is not anything like gambling. I have a friend who gambles every time he takes a day off. $200 is his limit. And he has lost that $200 over the last 43 years, 99% of the time. If he had invested that $200, and he goes about 12 times, about once a month, each year, if he had invested that $200 in a reasonably good retirement program, he would have been comfortably well off by the time he was 60. He has won a few times, a little bit, just enough to whet his imagination of what he might win when he goes back the next time. That hope that springs eternal within the human breast really bites people hard when they gamble. Because we hope against hope. We hope against the odds that we're going to win. What do we hear from the gambling interests? What do they tell us in order to take us in? They talk to us about all the jobs that are going to be created. High-paying jobs, they say. And we don't even pick up on that. High-paying jobs, where do they get the money? Out of your pocket and mine? High-paying jobs in the community. The principle of trickle-down economics. They preach this How much more patronage is going to come to the stores, the restaurants, the motels, the hotels, the gas stations, the tire shops, mechanics, car dealers, and the list goes on and on. They talk about all these great benefits to the community. Let me give you an example from Boonville, Missouri. 2 years ago, I visited the brethren there for about a week doing some work. And the city of Boonville was very, very interested in getting riverboat gambling to come to that town. If you've been to Boonville and you go down next to the water, there is a level area there on a point that juts out into the river that floods two or three times a year, rather regularly. And the people who have built a little bit back from that on the side of a little hill, but nonetheless, many of their houses have been flooded several times. And so the gambling interests, and these are people from Los Angeles, said to the fathers of the city there at Boonville, "You move all of those people out, and then we will come in and we'll spend $1 million to $3 million, and what we will do is this. We will build a large concrete breakwater just ahead of that curve to route the water out into the center of the stream more and keep it from coming over this way. And then we will build up that area some 20 feet with rock and various kinds of fill. And then we'll put a beautiful blacktop parking lot on top of it. And then we'll make a dock for our boat. And you'll have a situation where that doesn't get flooded and you have all this wonderful entertainment right at your front door." Now, why would gambling interests be willing to spend $1 to $3 million to do that? Because they know that'll be just a drop in the bucket to what they take out of that town. They know they'll get that back 100 times over. That's why they're willing. You see, this sounds like a great gift to the city fathers, to the city council. That sounds like almost unbelievable largesse. It's just a... what? It's just deceit. It's just deceit. Atlantic City is another example. That city opened its arms to professional gambling about 20 years ago. That was a tourist mecca at the time. There were around 200 motels, hotels, restaurants in that town. Today, there are only 50 such businesses. What's happened to the other 150? Well, number one, when the gambling interest came, the crime rate increased considerably. They had to increase the police force. They had to hire security people for almost every business in town. And this raised the tax base so high that many of the businessmen left. So today, there are only about 50 hotels, motels, restaurants in Atlantic City. But there is one kind of business that popped up like mushrooms all over the place, almost on every corner. Pawn shop. Pawn shops follow gambling interests. Why? Because they know people are going to pawn their VCRs, their binoculars, their rings, their typewriters, anything they can carry to the pawn shop in order to get money to gamble. And so the pawn shops are the trademark of a gambling community. And you will never find a community that's open to gambling that doesn't see pawn shops proliferate. They're natural in those communities. But a lot of people move out. So instead of all the benefits to the business people in the town, what almost always happens is a downturn in business in the town. When people have a constant wish or will to win, they tend to become rather single-minded in this. And that cancels out many of the other values which they once had. And that begins to affect family. It affects friends, almost everything they do. Because now there is an intention, hoarding, obsession to win. That's the thing that matters most. That's the thing they know most. I've had people tell me that Ecclesiastes 9 verse 11 justifies gambling. It says time and chance happen to us all. But this has absolutely nothing to do with gambling. If you were 5 minutes faster or slower in arriving at an intersection, you might have been in a wreck. This has happened to me 5 or 6 times. I had just passed an intersection. I missed it by about 30 seconds. Timing is everything. If we should get 3 inches of rain while I'm gone, but I don't think we will, but if we should, about half the things in my garden would not be benefited at all. Why? It's too late. We've been dry too long. Timing is everything. And so timing hits us all in all phases of our life. And chance, uncertainty reigns. This is why the farmer plows or plants in hope, because he has no certainty of a crop. So he hopes, he wishes, he desires it. And so in that vein he plants, but he can't guarantee a harvest. No one can. Chance. The other day an accident happened in Springfield and a 2-month-old baby was killed. Other people in the car weren't injured. The mother was carrying the little child in her arms, and the impact jarred the child out of her arms, and he split his head on the dash. She blamed God for that. Blamed chance, because that's what it was. Why did God build uncertainty into our lives? Why did he decree that timing was going to be so important to us sometimes? Because that's simply his way of testing us. If everything in life were certain, now there was a time in Israel because of their obedience to God when everything was certain, but only briefly. But if when you build a house, you are certain it's going to bring top price on the market, and if you had that certitude about everything you do, your life would be one long series of successes without a single failure anywhere. Is there any challenge in that? None whatsoever. And that's why it isn't that way. But there isn't a person sitting here that is not affected by time and chance. And in all phases of your life, you'll be affected by it. I've also heard people say that casting lots was a form of gambling. Well, if you'll check carefully, 1 Samuel 14:42 and Acts 1 verse 26, you'll find that in both cases, those casting the lots ask God to make the decision. There was no gamble there. Whatever God decided was the answer. There was certainty there. There was no chance. There was no odd taking. Simply a question and an assured answer. I don't know how that looks like gambling. It doesn't look remotely like it to me. And then people go to the Urim and the Thummim. They will grasp at any straw to try to justify this by the Scripture. But it's the very same sort of thing, simply a question and an answer. That isn't gambling, to ask a question and get an answer. Of course that isn't gambling. But as I say, people will try anything. Now, people who gamble have a very poor sense of priorities. Do you realize that there are a number of hidden expenses that plague the gambler? One of the reasons he is quite often, or she is quite often, short of money, always seems to be strapped, is that there are a number of things we may not think about. Now, most of the people I know go a considerable distance to gamble. They will drive perhaps over into Kansas, or they'll go to Kansas City, or they'll go over to the Mississippi and get on a riverboat. But there is a considerable distance involved, which costs money. If they intend to stay a week, that's a week in a motel or a hotel. That costs money. They have to eat while they're there. That also costs money. And then there's the money that they may lose. In other words, what we're talking about is a far greater outlay of funds than only what is gambled with. And this is one of the reasons that people who gamble quite often are flat broke. Because it's taken everything they had, the primary focus, plus all of these other expenses, and they absolutely don't have a suit of their name. Are we to wish other people bad luck? Suppose I said to you, brother, I hope you fall flat on your face. How would God react to that if that were my ordinary greeting to people? I hope you lose. I hope you fail. And that is exactly what every gambler must hope. He has to hope that everybody else loses so he can win. Now think of the farmer again. What if 50 farmers had to fail before he could bring in a good crop? Kind of stupidity is this? And yet that's exactly the way gambling works. That's how it works. Others must lose or I can't win. And in the case of our lottery a week ago, 180 million people had to lose if I had the winning ticket. But it isn't necessary for everybody in the community to fail so that I can win. So again, you see, farming and gambling just are not remotely related. There is no similarity here at all. Do you realize that many people have health problems because they gamble? Doctors will tell you that gamblers have all kinds of ailments related to high tension. Now, there is a natural tension, and I've seen this, I've watched it many times in people who gamble. It builds as a gambling session goes on. And as the pot gets bigger, or as the evening progresses, that begins to get higher and higher, and the blood pressure goes up, the heart begins to pump a little harder. The body, in other words, switches into all alert, which is akin in motors to running it wide open. And to do this night after night, several times a night, is extremely hard on the human health. It's like kicking into overdrive, full speed, open it wide, and do this time after time after time after time over the course of an evening. No wonder people have serious health problems. I have wondered many times if gambling is ever recommended by anyone who needs a diversion or as a means of getting something else out of his or her system. But you know, I have never heard of a psychiatrist, a psychologist, a sociologist, an MD, or anyone associated with the human mind or the human body in a healing sense that ever recommended gambling to a patient. Now, they recommend a host of different things, but none has ever recommended gambling. And if you go into recreation specialists, counselors, they never recommend gambling to anyone. And why is this? Because they know that it does not relax people, it makes tensions worse. That's why they never recommend it. The only possible benefit one could accrue from gambling might be a big pot that is won once in a while. I don't know of any other benefit. Do you believe that if one wins a big pot, that he's going to quit? Do these lucky persons give up gambling? Almost never. Almost never. Because all one win does is hone our appetite for more. And we think if we won this much, next time we'll win more. You see, we totally forget that long trail of losses that preceded that one win. We totally forget those things. And what generally happens is that we lose all we won and more besides, and we're worse off than we were in the beginning. This is so often true. If a person wins the lottery, they think they have it made. I've heard people say, well, if I win that, I'll never work again. If I can win that, I'm going to travel all over the world. In other words, it's going to radically change my lifestyle, and I'll never have a day of drudgery in my life again. They say almost these words exactly. I will say to my soul, soul, you've got it made. Take your ease. Eat, drink, and be merry. Do those words sound familiar? They should, because they're repeated in Luke 12, beginning in verse 10. And do you recall what the Lord said to the man who originally said those words? And he would say the same thing to anyone who says them now. He would say, you fool. You stupid ignoramus. That's what the Lord would say. Don't you have any better sense than this? Because the person who thinks he has it made, who radically changes his lifestyle, who changes the habits and the motions that are so familiar throughout life, what almost invariably happens to that individual? A lessening of ability, almost every time, and oftentimes, quick death. Once your body accustoms itself to a certain pace, to a certain style of work, you better be very, very carefully about radically changing that. You'll get a reaction that you may not want. Gambling is the pursuit of wealth, is it not? That's what we're after when we gamble. We want money. And Paul said to Timothy that those who have such a desire fall into temptation and a snare and into many foolish and hurtful lusts which drown people in destruction and perdition. That's what happens when we want a lot of money. We want a lot of wealth, especially quick wealth. And let me close with three little statements just to make you think. In Genesis 3, verse 19, Adam was told that he would eat bread in the sweat of his face, not by the flip of a card. In Ephesians 4:28, he said, "Those who stole, steal no more, but instead labor, working with your hands the thing that is good so that you'll have to give to those who have need." Not the throwing of dice. Labor with your hands. And in 2 Thessalonians 3, verse 10, Paul says, "To those who won't work, neither do you eat." God would say to those who live by the flip of a card, by throwing dice, by practicing deceit, by using trickery or any other means, he would say to them, "You do not deserve to eat. Because you're not doing the kind of work that I designed for man, the ennobling kind of work that I smile upon. But you're doing the devil's work. You're hurting people to help yourself. And you do not deserve to eat." Gambling is a scourge on our nation. Firmly established, passed off as harmful pastime only by those who are perceptive. If you know anyone who gambles, try to help that person. If you know anyone who has gambled and is trying to quit, do everything you can for that person, because it's like a disease. It's an obsession, almost like the person who takes dope. It's in the same class exactly. What about the recidivism rate of gamblers? We're told that over 90% of all prisoners released return to prison. I would say that the rate is even higher for gamblers. Around 95%. All of those who have gambled a great deal, who try to quit, in about 95% of the cases, do not. It seems they cannot. And that's why those who gamble so desperately need our help. With God, there is no uncertainty. His great and precious promises are sure. There is no uncertainty in the love of God, in His care and concern for His people, for the children of the flesh. The surest thing in this world is the love, the fellowship, the care, the mercy, and the help that we find in God and in His Son, Jesus Christ. The safest haven in this world is where you sit right now, in the Church of Jesus Christ of our Lord. Because here you have help, here you have counsel, here you have shoulders to lean on. If you're not a child of God, these things have great value for you, and you consider where your priorities are and what matters most. Would you rather be surrounded by goodness or by all manner of sinners? Would you rather talk to people who don't use profanity, who won't lie to you, or would you rather be around people who lie easily and who use all manner of evil speaking? You think of the difference. Think of what is offered through Christ. Think about it seriously as we stand and as we sing.